Next Monday, 116 cardinals will essentially be locked away in the Vatican, away from cell phones, television, and all other such worldly distractions, and will begin to choose a new pope. The next pope will be the spiritual, moral, and religious guide for Catholics across the world, but he will also attend to more Catholic concerns. That's Catholic with a small c. The Church has always also been a political institution, bringing its power to bear on the secular world from the Middle Ages through the Renaissance and into the modern era. The legacy of John Paul II is as much political as it is doctrinal. During his 26 years as Pope, his agitation against communism and his advocacy for human rights were felt on nearly every continent. The next Pope will not only be the successor to John Paul's vision, but will assume a mantle that popes have worn for nearly 2,000 years. Scott Appleby is a religious historian who directs the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at Notre Dame. He joins us from South Bend, Indiana. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Robin Wright is the diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post. She joins us from her office over at The Post. Ms. Wright, thank you for being with us.
Great to be with you, Scott.
And Mr. Appleby, let me begin with you. A small history lesson, if that's possible to encapsulate the history of several centuries. It was so often said that John Paul was unprecedented in this dimension, but really, if you look back a couple thousand years, have popes always been trying to figure out ways to apply political influence?
Certainly, it's been more the norm than the exception, and as you know, in the High Middle Ages, the popes made grand claims for being the source of all temporal, that is, political power, as well as spiritual power. And therefore, there was a long and often bitter history of direct political struggles with Holy Roman emperors and political figures throughout emerging Europe. And there was no doubt at that point that the theological and political claims were directly political.
Robin Wright, this week you wrote that the Pope inspired, you say, political upheavals on four continents. Talk about some of those visits, if you could.
I was with him, an example, in Brazil in 1980, and I remember him standing in front of a crowd of over 120,000 workers who were in the nascent stages of beginning a trade union movement. And he got up and he was thrusting his fist in the air, shouting, "Solidarity, solidarity," after the Polish trade union movement. And this was, in a way, his means of urging them on to mobilize, to be a force to be reckoned with inside the country and fighting for their rights. But I also saw him in Japan, where he was ministering to radiation victims left more than 30 years after the dropping of the bomb during World War II. His range and his impact in sending a message of fighting for human justice and equality, looking after the poor, was very striking. I was in the Philippines with him when he confronted Ferdinand Marcos, and with a message that the world, the church, would not tolerate someone looking after his own political survival and political system over the rights of the people. And he then got out into the slums of Manila and talk to the people in a way that mobilized them, and I think the people power was in part a product of his presence in the Philippines.
In your travels with the Pope and writing in many ways about his political and diplomatic effect, did you ever see him change his mind?
I think the Pope was very good at adapting to the times. In the aftermath of the Cold War's end, I remember going with him to the Baltic states, what had recently become independent after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and giving a lecture in Latvia in which he warned not about communism but about the dangers of capitalism. And this became a theme of his throughout the 1990s and I think until the end of his papacy, his concern that freedoms would translate into excessive materialism, what he called in an encyclical neo-paganism.
What are some of the methods a pope can use to apply his influence?
The Pope established diplomatic relations with 64 new nations during his pontificate between the Vatican and those nations. Among the most significant, perhaps, was with the United States, with the Soviet Union, and then extraordinarily with Israel, and he visited Yasser Arafat and the Palestinians. And in each of these ways, in opening up these diplomatic channels, He brought a new attitude to that diplomacy.
Why was it for many years the Vatican didn't have diplomatic relations with so many nations?
Well, in the case of the United States, it was controversial on the side of many Americans, including the Protestant majority. there had been less attention before John Paul's pontificate to anti-Semitism and to the plight of Jews in the world. That was largely his initiative from the side of the church, and it was welcomed warmly by most Jewish leaders. So in each case, there's a different story. This pope used diplomatic relations to get a foot in the door, to open channels of communication, to try to influence the policies of various nations, both democracies and dictatorial regimes.
There's a widespread view around the world that the world has become a more dangerous place since September of 2001, just at the time when it was perceived to have been a less dangerous place after the end of the Cold War. What kind of political leadership do you think Catholics and non-Catholics around the world might look to the next pope to bring, Robin Wright?
Well, I suspect the Catholic Church may want to take a deep breath in the aftermath of a great papacy and look for someone who will be a transition pontiff, someone perhaps from the Italian branch of the church, to bring it back to its base and to allow some time to settle to see in which direction they want to go. The Pope accomplished an enormous amount in reaching out to the world.
Scott Appleby.
I would add to that a topic that Robin has written about very vividly, which is the rising role of political Islam. There are many similarities between the role of Catholicism and some of its teachings, at least on a general level, and the orientation of Islam. We would clump those under the broad heading of traditional religious values. On the other hand, the Catholic Church has developed a social ethic and a theology increasingly of nonviolence and a great deal of discourse on just war. Islam has its own traditions there, and that's going to be a very important political issue, the role of Islam and Catholicism in world politics.
And this is where, in many ways, his symbolic overture in going to a mosque in Syria, the first pope to make this step, went a long way. And as a result, he is mourned not only in the Christian world, but in the Islamic world and also the Jewish world.
Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robin Wright, diplomatic correspondent for The Washington Post, and Scott Appleby, who directs the Kroc Institution for International Peace Studies at Notre Dame.